On a November afternoon in 2013, two Oakland teenagers' lives collided for just 8 minutes on the 57 bus. Sasha, an age-ember teen in a white skirt, dozed off while reading Anna Karenina. Richard, 16 and wearing a black hoodie, joked with friends nearby. In a moment of impulsive cruelty, Richard flicked a lighter to Sasha's skirt. The flames engulfed 22% of Sasha's body, leading to weeks in a burn unit. Richard faced felony charges with hate crime enhancements, potentially facing life imprisonment. This wasn't just another crime story. It became a national conversation about gender identity, justice, and the power of forgiveness. How could a split-second decision alter two lives so dramatically? And what does it reveal about the divisions in our society, where teenagers from the same city might as well live in different worlds? The incident forces us to confront uncomfortable questions. How do we balance accountability with compassion? Can we see humanity in those who cause harm? And is our justice system equipped to handle the complexity of cases involving youth, identity, and impulsive actions? Oakland, despite its modest size, ranks 7th nationally in income inequality. The city's extraordinary diversity masks stark divisions. The wealthy hills feature good schools and bay views, while East Oakland, Richard's neighborhood, experiences 2/3 of the city's murders. The 57 bus connects these separate worlds, traveling diagonally through Oakland's disparate neighborhoods. In East Oakland, fewer than 100 of 600 African American boys graduate high school, meeting college requirements. Black boys account for nearly 75% of juvenile arrests, despite comprising less than 30% of Oakland's youth population. "Every year we lose somebody," Richard's friend Cherie would later say. "I'm scared for myself because bullets don't have no names on them." This reality shaped Richard's worldview, while Sasha grew up in Berkeley's Hills, attending Maybeck High School, where gender experimentation was commonplace and intellectual curiosity celebrated. Imagine growing up knowing survival isn't guaranteed versus an environment where your biggest concern is expressing your identity. From early childhood, Sasha showed remarkable linguistic talent. By age 3, they matched sounds with letters. By 4, analyzed letters as shapes, and by 6, created astrolinguish for their imaginary planet. This aptitude later helped them articulate their complex gender identity. During winter 2012, sophomore Sasha asked peers how they knew their gender. Most simply said, "I just know." But Sasha couldn't find that certainty. They felt neither attached to nor detached from any gender, as if their mental file for gender was missing. Through online exploration, Sasha discovered frameworks separating biological sex, gender identity, sexuality, and romantic attraction. They identified as agender, adopted the name Sasha, and began wearing skirts with masculine elements like top hats. "What I want is for people to be confused about what gender I am," Sasha explained, finding freedom beyond binary categories. How certain are you about your own gender? For many, it feels as natural as breathing. For others, self-understanding requires creating language beyond established categories. Richard's childhood unfolded in a different Oakland. His mother, Jasmine, pregnant at 14, maintained a disciplined household with strong values. At 14, Richard joined the Heartbreak Kids crew. His friend Cherie reflected, "We weren't angels, but we had good hearts. We looked out for each other." Richard was the group's protected comedian. Everything changed when Richard's best friend Skeet was murdered while Richard was away in a group home. "That killed Richard," Cherie said. Unlike others who had support during the funeral, Richard grieved alone, hours away. Returning to Oakland, Richard showed new maturity, joining a job training program and impressing supervisors with his intelligence. Yet dangers persisted. In his junior year, he was robbed at gunpoint, losing everything from his shoes to his coat. For Richard and many teens in similar circumstances, constant exposure to violence reshaped their developing brains. Survival meant developing a protective shell that sometimes hardened into harmful attitudes toward those perceived as different. Sasha loved buses. The intersecting transit lines, precise schedules, even drawing imaginary transit systems. On November 4th, exhausted from writing a paper, they fell asleep on the 57 bus traveling along MacArthur Boulevard. Surveillance cameras captured Lloyd and Richard boarding around 5 p.m. Jamal, seated nearby, pointed out Sasha's skirt, handed Richard a lighter, and positioned his iPhone to record, saying, "You might as well do it." After several attempts, Richard ignited Sasha's skirt just as Lloyd exited. Richard jumped off, but Lloyd watched as the skirt erupted into flames. Sasha leaped up, screaming, "I'm on fire," while frantically slapping at their skirt. Two men rushed forward, one pushing Sasha to the floor and smothering the flames with his coat. At St. Francis Memorial Hospital, Dr. Grossman examined the burns covering 22% of Sasha's body, third-degree burns penetrating to the fat layer. 8 minutes changed two lives forever. A lighter flicked in jest became a weapon. A public nap became vulnerability. 2 days after Richard's arrest, the district attorney charged him as an adult with two felonies: aggravated mayhem and assault with intent to cause great bodily injury, both with hate crime enhancements. If convicted, he faced life imprisonment, impossible in juvenile court. This reflected a 1990s shift in juvenile justice, originally founded on the principle that young offenders were malleable and different from adults. The system changed during that decade's crime wave, with states enacting laws allowing juveniles to be tried as adults. During questioning, Richard first claimed he only witnessed the aftermath, but later admitted being very homophobic. After seeing surveillance footage, he confessed, "I don't like gay people." Richard wrote letters to Sasha that his attorney withheld. "I was wrong. I'm not a monster." He accepted responsibility for the injury, but rejected the hate crime charge. What does justice look like for a 16-year-old? Should brain development affect how we assign blame? How do we balance punishment with rehabilitation? By October 2014, Richard accepted a 5-year plea deal, potentially served in juvenile detention. During her victim impact statement, Debbie moved Richard to tears, saying, "We do not understand your actions, but we also think that hatred only leads to more hatred," expressing hope he would develop empathy. Sasha moved into Epsilon Theta at MIT, a former Navy fraternity, now the anti-fraternity, dry, co-ed, and full of self-described nerds. Though the only non-binary person there, the house accommodated them by changing bathroom designations to Men's Plus and Women's Plus. Their new community barely knew about the fire. While incarcerated, Richard earned his high school diploma and vocational certificates, working at an e-waste recycling nonprofit to pay court fines and save money. "We hope the state will focus more on preparing him for the world beyond incarceration than on punishing him," Carl said at a progress hearing. Perhaps most remarkable wasn't the crime itself, but the capacity for growth and healing that followed, on both sides.